And good afternoon, and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet. I'm here in the studio with the late Patty Fink and Laurent Landis. I have a bone to pick with Patty first. Patty, what do you do at 12:45 every Sunday since 2000?
I call you religiously.
And what did you not do today?
I didn't call you.
She wasn't late.
I wasn't late.
That's not the point. You call at 12:45, oh, I'm running a little bit late, and sometimes you are, sometimes you're not. You have no idea.
I met some friends for Aaron and I met some friends for brunch today. So,
And your point being
that it messed up my schedule.
Where did
totally?
It completely did. Where did you have brunch over here at Cindy's, right next door to us?
No,
you
that would have been a good choice, though.
It would have been.
We were at
Maybe
Cozy
next
Kitchen
time.
in Knox Henderson.
Okay. Well, enough of my complaining about
now
Patty.
I'm hungry.
After the show, it's wonderful.
The challah French toast is fantastic.
Our guests today are two troublemakers. I mean, two good friends, Sadie Kirvin and Michael Dominguez. Laurent suggested we have a discussion about race and about a number of other things, and he immediately thought of, well, one of the new troublemakers.
Well, this actually started online, a dialogue between the three of us, which actually came out of an article that is in the latest issue of Attitude by Michael Sam. Yes, that Michael Sam, the football player. And he made some comments in his interview about how he thought that there was more racism in the gay community than there was homophobia in the black community. So that started a dialogue between us. I thought, you know what, we need to talk about this. I mean, just racism in general needs to be talked about more. Especially within our community. So I invited you guys on, so welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So one of the things that he talks about is that with the dating, he's been accused of not being black enough, he's not being gay enough, and I guess that's because he's a big, burly football player. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But I just wanted, you know, there's a lot of opinions about what racism is, what a racist act is, and a lot of people, particularly white individuals in the gay community, will say, there's no way I could be a racist because I'm gay, or lesbian, or transgender, or whatever. So I wanted to start off, you know, can you all give some thoughts on what do you think have been racist acts?
I'm glad. I've been talking about this for years. This is not a new thing, and I guess I've kind of been... I think I'm loud enough where it'll go.
Yeah, it's good. It's good.
Yeah,
it's good.
That's another thing. Let's get this straight. I'm loud and I'm black, and that's been some, you know, this whole, you know, she's an angry black woman type deal. That's been a label on mine, and, you know, people in the black gay community or the black community in whole and the white community have always told me, you know, I've had personal LGBT activist friends like, no, you're not. I'm like, yes, I am. And I'm not afraid to embrace that. I'm black. I get discrimination for that. I'm a woman. I get discrimination for that. I'm gay. I get discrimination for that. I think I have ample reason to be angry. But, you know, in our conversation, we had this engagement. And it's always a very delicate, you know, dance to do. Because, you know, people just don't want to talk about it. And a lot of wanting to not address this issue head on is that they don't want the dynamics to change.
Yeah, so
there's a fear of that changing. And here's I know you asked for a direct example. There's no black person in the history of the gay pride parade that is good enough to be grand marshal.
In the history of the Dallas.
I want to know.
That's insane.
There's nobody that's done anything that's black that's worthy to be grand marshal in the city of Dallas.
That is crazy.
Answer that question to me.
Has anybody been nominated even?
I was nominated.
You were nominated.
Carter from Black Trans Man was nominated.
Right. Yeah.
A personal friend and a transgender, I think they should be nominated too. Oliver Plummer was nominated.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I was nominated a couple of years in a row. Mm-hmm. You know, there's some things that were said behind the scenes that I was told is the reason why I probably shouldn't be selected as the face of Dallas, and it didn't have anything to do with all the activism LGBT rights I've been fighting for.
I love your face.
But I'm just saying, there's a prime example.
That's a great example. I mean, that's kind of mind-boggling, actually. Wow.
Decades.
But we've had some repeats.
We've had repeats. Patty, haven't you been a repeat?
No.
No, you've
never been nominated.
But
wasn't Cece a repeat?
Yeah.
The woman with the Cathedral of Hope that was the priest. Well, hasn't she been a repeat twice?
Just once, I think.
No, I think she's gotten it twice.
Huh,
I believe.
Okay.
I've seen a few repeats in the time, and I'm saying we've honored several people twice without not honoring one black person once. And it's enough of an issue where I think that it just needs to be the question needs to be posed. We don't need to throw in every other sexism, transphobia, anything else. We need to have a straight conversation why that's okay. And that shouldn't even be acceptable in the white half of our community, if you ask me. That to me is disturbing, because I'm going to tell you something. I've never pushed for rights for anybody, I've spoken up for anybody, no matter what their race, sex, color, religion was. I fought for anybody that needed my help.
Amen. Amen.
I think that when you talk about racism and why it's such an uncomfortable conversation to have is because it's an individual core set of values for people. And once you talk about something that people don't necessarily think is an issue for them internally, you start to have them really question themselves and have to take a hard look at their value system and what they believe and how they act and how they treat people. And for a lot of people, that is a very uncomfortable thing to do. People inherently like to think that they are good. And not saying that every single act or every single thing said is a racist comment. There are prejudices, there are biases. A lot of them are products of geographical locations where we grew up, religion, how we grew up, if it was a single parent, a traditional family. All of those play into how we are molded as adults. And particularly in the LGBTQ community, I think that for everybody's experience coming out, I think is the catalyst that molds them into the gay person that they are today, how they are accepted, how they are embraced. And for a lot of minority groups, their coming out experiences are starkly different than people that are white. And they just can't get on the same page to how you live. And I don't want to understand that, and I can't understand that, so I'm just going to not talk about it.
Okay,
because it's too big of a problem.
Michael, give me a couple of examples, though. What, in just coming out, what are some of the differences?
So, well, you know, for traditional Latinos, a bulk of Hispanic people are Catholic, very Catholic. It's was the religion for a lot of the immigrants that came over, and it's the religion that is kind of passed down. Catholics are painfully conservative. Catholics, particularly some members of my family, they don't necessarily talk about a lot of different things like that. They sweep a lot of things under the rug. So when you're coming out, it should be a very personal experience. Like, this is me. This is a part of who I am. And for a lot of people who have that big either language barrier, cultural barrier, religion barrier, you can't have an honest conversation about that. And, I mean, my experience, you know, coming out black, I'm not black, so I can't testify to that, but I'm sure CD will have something with her experience that's fairly similar. There is something cultural that I would never understand about her experience that I could never understand about your experience. But at the core, it should all be something that bonds us together, because we all experience something similar. But unfortunately, it's not the case.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, come on, let's you know, we can paint over it with a pretty brush, and like the Tea Party people like to say, you can put lipstick on a pig for so long, it's still a pig. It's okay in straight society, so it's okay in gay society. It's acceptable. I mean, we're acting like, you know, black people aren't being killed in the streets, and there's not like this big race thing standing in society as a whole. It would mirror itself in the LGBT community. I can say that we have a different era of activism coming together. When I was a young buck like yourself.
Years and years ago, CD. Years ago.
We gay people had no choice but to come together over race. It was almost, this race thing wasn't as big a gap now as it was back then, because we went into hole in the wall clubs. You remember Jugs?
Oh, sure.
It was a hole in the wall club. We were going to get beat down together. So,
yeah.
I mean, now the race thing is more more of an issue. But back then, we were sneaking in these clubs together, worried about getting killed, beat up, hit because we were gay. Not that the race thing didn't exist, because we sometimes would go to the acceptable gay clubs, and I know plenty of blacks that can come on this show and tell you about their experience where they needed three forms of ID to get into
exactly.
the same club as a white person in a gay club. The white gay man they went got in showing one form of ID, and they were required to perform to provide three forms of ID. So this is the ugly pig that's been out there for years.
But that's exactly the same thing that the same experience that women have had in the gay community here in Dallas.
Oh yeah.
It's been a white male world. Mm-hmm. I mean, and still to a large degree very much is. It's pale, male, and stale.
Well, here it is, though, Patty, as we're talking about that, though, women have made more progress as blacks have had, as we can see in the experience of our Dallas Gay Pride celebration. We've had women grand marshals, but we have not had a black one.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So
right.
let's not dismiss that pig way too soon.
Oh no, I'm not.
That's what
I'm not.
Find, you know what I'm saying?
Saying in the old days, in the old days of needing three or four IDs, women needed two, and they couldn't wear open-toed shoes, and there were lots of restrictions to keep the women out of the club, so it could be strictly white males.
You know.
And it's a white male world, and it still is. And who's holding us back? I'm going to guess white males.
Yeah. It's so funny. You know, growing up in, you know, out in HEB, everybody heard of Oaklawn. I had never been to Oaklawn, but I knew about it, and I couldn't wait to get out there and get involved and mixed up in it. So finally, when I did, I had this idea in my head of what the gay world or what the gay community would be like. I wouldn't have to worry about my color. That was the last thing that was on my mind. And, you know, like Michael, we discussed before the show, I also grew up, I think my school was 97% white. So in my mind, the utopia, this gay utopia, was Oak Lawn. When I actually got out there, I was so surprised that you had white gay clubs, you had black gay clubs, you had Latino gay clubs, you had Asian gay clubs, and I even that you had lesbian gay clubs or lesbian clubs. I'm like, what? I thought everybody was under the same roof having a good time. That was so surprising to me. So surprising to me. And to see that now in the world of activism, we still have, you know, very segregated groups. I'm like, why can't everybody just do it together? So, and I don't know. I definitely don't have the answer how to fix it.
Well, there's some discussion and uncomfortable discussions, and I even have to push back on what you said. There's not any black gay clubs. There was a black night.
No.
You know what I'm saying? There was a black night on the clubs even recently that is gone.
No, I don't know now, but back then they definitely had some gay black clubs.
They may have had one black club that weren't nowhere near the strip, and we have
a female club and
a white male club on the strip.
That's
right
what I'm
now.
Saying. It wasn't on the strip, and they had Bombaleos. It's way before you came.
they still have Bombaleos. I don't want to diss you, Bombaleos.
Yeah, so I mean, but that's the fact. That's my point. They had them separate in different areas.
We have Caliente Steel on Maple. Not that this is an advertisement, but. Yeah, but we don't have a black gay club. It doesn't exist.
You know, one other thing I already said it, but I want to get you all's take on it. Michael Sam said that he has felt more racism within the LGBT community than homophobia in the black community. I have a different experience than that. What about you all?
You go first, Michael, because
I think that I don't think necessarily that there is an uptick in racism in the gay community. I think the advent of social media and chat apps have made it that much easier to discriminate. Used to be, when you didn't have those, you would have to go up to somebody and see them face to face. And if you were rude or if you discriminated or were racist, you get clocked in the face. People were afraid to be that blunt with you. These chat apps give somebody the complete rein to say, no blacks, no Asians, no Hispanics, white only, not racist, just a preference. And you never have to interact with that person. Right. It's very easy to be brazenly prejudiced with that. And it's more to the forefront. People are seeing it a lot more than they were. And it's a double-edged sword. It's good because it is starting a conversation that is decades in the making. Bad because, like, come on. We're all oppressed in some way or another. But I think it just goes back to a larger societal problem of this particular image of a white male is what is acceptable, and the gay community is trying so hard to fit into a little bubble. You can look at all of our advertisement. It's all, you know, heteronormative, straight, white, male-looking. That's all that's in our advertisements. And you have a fringe group of all the LGBT community that is unconsciously being discriminated by ourselves because we are trying so hard to fit in order to fly under the radar and not get discriminated against.
Well, personally, let me
just make a comment on that, because I understand that, and that's the generation he's experienced, but I don't think that's so. I've been discriminated against in my face plainly.
No.
And called the N-word plainly.
By people that are in the LGBT community.
Plainly. And I've written about this several times. And even how I have been portrayed in the LGBT media, it's as opposed to my cohorts. And me and Mark Reed, who is my friend, that's how we met. I wrote an article in the Dallas Voice, Living in Black and White Way Too Long, and he sought me out. And he said, "It's he was the son of a preacher who fought in the civil rights movement. And he said he was compelled to come to me and do something about it because he as a white male, was sick of it. And I don't want to pretend like, I mean, it's his generation. That's Michael's experience. But that's not been my experience. Yeah. As a black female person in this community for over 20 years. I don't want to get my age out, but I mean, that's the truth.
Well, and also, I'm not black, and so my experience is starkly different from what you've experienced.
No, I'm just saying it's blunt. It's plain. We're not desired. And there's this separate society that's been created because of it.
Yeah.
We didn't create it because we wanted to. We created it out of necessity.
We need to take a break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink and Laurent Landis. Our guests are Michael Dominguez and C.D. Kervin. We're just talking about race and having just an open conversation about it, and we're going to continue that right after this.
This is Raphael McDonald from Resource Center Dallas. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM.
And you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Laurent Landis and the late Patty Fink, who refused to give me my running late today call, and she's not going to hear the end of that.
You're living in the past today, David.
He just loves Patty.
Uh-huh.
Let it go.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you.
Let it go. Let it go.
And our guests are Idina Menzel and Michael Dominguez. We're talking about race. You started, Laurent, with something about that Michael Sam had said. And that is
what he said was that he has felt more racism within the LGBT community than homophobia within the black community. So I was kind of getting everyone's take on their individual experience. And I was just going to say mine, and that is I have definitely felt more homophobia within the black community than racism within the LGBT community. I've only been verbally accosted twice about being gay from black men out in public in broad daylight, to the point where, you know, fist almost came to blows. I've never been called the N-word to my face from somebody in the LGBT community or anything like that. There's been some subliminal racism I've definitely faced. I mean, I've been slighted on this very show. I'm not going to mention any names, but...
mention them.
No, don't do that.
So... But it just goes to show everybody's experience is different.
And you're talking, you're talking about guests.
Yes. Yes.
And I just want to bring it. Very often I'll book a guest. I book most of the guests, and I'll just send them a message who's going to be on. And I think he's always surprised at how many black or Hispanic guests we have. Because I've seen you look, oh.
Because
I never mention so-and-so who's an expert on such-and-such will be talking about such-and-such, and then the person comes in, and that person might be black, but it has nothing to do with the topic that we're talking about.
No.
I mean, the fact that we're open to having this discussion here, David, that's a good indication.
I'm just saying, but I know several times where we have had some guests where that's very true.
From my point of view?
From your point of view. No. From your point of view, where we've had some guests where you've been slighted.
Yes.
So I'm agreeing with that. Yes, I'm just... Yes. clearing that up.
Yeah, he's just saying, it ain't
he's
me.
He's clearing that up. It was not from David. Okay.
Just for the record, I don't think Patty or David is racist.
Yes, okay, let's clear that up. Let's get past that. Yeah, let's say so, that.
But
right
no, it is interesting how everyone has different experiences.
Yeah. Right, and I think that we were talking about this before. You know, we had this discussion, I think it was on my Facebook page, you know. Hey, it's my page, so I'm going to have a conversation.
You want to talk or be entertained,
well, let's be real.
Go to CD's page.
You know, here it is. It's like with Martin Luther King. You know, the gay community always wants to go back to the civil rights movement in how we fight for our rights, but we don't want to address the race problem we have in our community. And what I like to say to the community as a whole, not just the white gay community, but the black gay community, Martin Luther King himself said this, after a while, silence becomes betrayal. And, yes. and that's the truth. You see it going on as well as I do. You don't need me to validate my experience. You don't need me to say there's racism in the community. You've seen it. And your silence becomes somewhat after years acceptance of that norm. Just like I push in the black community that homophobia becomes an acceptance of the norm. But what I'd like to say, too, is that the gay community is learning what the black community already knows. You can get rights, but you're going to have to fight for them. And as we've seen with these North Carolina laws and these Tennessee laws coming up for grabs, just because we have a right don't mean we're going to keep it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you are learning what the civil rights movement already learned, like we've learned with our voter rights. You can have them for years, but they can come back and take them.
And CD, my father's second wife was a Holocaust survivor, and she always lived in fear. And one time I said to her, you know, Ann, you have a house in Florida, you have a house in New York, you live such a nice life. What are you afraid of? And that's exactly what she said. They can always take it away from you.
They can always take
because
it away from me.
It.
And here's my question is like, why I find more than anything, racism and sexism is something that has to be justified. It's a thing that has a card. Oh, you're playing that card that's thrown in our face every time to kind of take the legs out from under what we're saying.
Well, I think that's part of the conversation. Whenever you hear a person of color race issues, it's always
the race card.
Well, you're playing the race card or you're complaining. That's the biggest insult you can say to somebody who's raising a concern is that they're just complaining.
Right.
I hate that.
Well, why can't we be having a substantive talk? I can exactly. tell you that a lot of the LGBT black community people always saying, well, why are you only, you know, they even get sick of me. You're like, CD, why are you always the only black woman that's always, you know, marching? Let's get some more blacks up in here.
You're like, I would love
that. I
have
gone to them and we have had talks. They don't want to.
No.
They're tired, and they're sick of the racism, and they have become accustomed to the separate but equal life in the LGBT community, and they feel like, okay, the whites are going to fight for their rights anyway, so we're just going to stay here and we're going to be satisfied with our peace. And I'm saying we need to be a community as a whole. I'm going to tell you, as a proud queer person of color, I don't care that I have to face racism in the community. I don't care how you portray me in the media. I don't care what the people think about me. I don't care if you don't like my Facebook posts. I am proud to be gay. And there are too many of my fellow LGBT activists out there that are white that I love, that are Hispanic that I love, that you're not, through your racism or your sexism, going to shy me back into a box. I will deal with it, and I will fight on, and I will show my face as a black queer person fighting for gay rights. I will show my face as a black queer person fighting for black rights. I will show my face as a black queer person fighting for women's rights and abortion access. And all the people that don't like those things, suck it up.
Well, I think there's a level of complacency, because we have people like you that are fired up, that want to come and want to do this. And you talked about the other people in the community that are just tired. We're not going to do this. And what they don't realize is at some point, all of our strong activists and our voices, they're not going to be here. And what our community is going to be left with is a very fractured infrastructure of complacency and people who don't care. And we're going to be at risk of having everything taken away, like you said, and we're back at square one, because nobody cares to stand up and speak for our women, for our trans individuals, for our black brothers, for our immigrants. Nobody cares. My life is good right now. I'm not going to rock the boat because it's just not worth it. And at some point, you're going to have to start back over and rocking the boat, or we're not going to get anywhere.
You know, going on both of your points about that, Something else I noticed, you know, when I first got involved, you know, especially particularly with this show, way back in 1999 or 2000, whatever it was, you know, I did my share of going to different, you know, different LGBT events and HR events, and I noticed a lot. I was one of very few, and I mean very few, black people who attended these events, and I would like to know why we think that is. No, no one invited me or say you can come because we need black people there. It pertained to me because I was gay, so I just went.
Yeah.
Well,
you know,
and one of the complaints I've heard from particularly African American LGBT activists is that, you know, well, they don't play the music that, you know, that, you know, basically they're not immersing their culture in it. And I don't know, I just didn't look at it the same way. I'm like, they needed me there because I'm part of it, so I went.
Well, I hadn't been, I mean, and I can't speak for every black gay person.
Of course.
Please, God, let everybody know that.
Of course.
But you know, I mean, we have Carter, we have Camarion, we have, you know, several, we have you, Michael, we have several queer activists of color. Yeah, that have a just as strong voice as I do. So don't think that I'm speaking for every queer black person in the world of color. But I want to say that I have partied with them. I go to, you know, I have gone to black clubs. I have gone to Algo in Austin. I've helped with Derek Spielman create DFW Pride Movement. I have been immersed in the LGBT black community. I have worked with LULAC. I have, you know, talked to these people on a level because I wanted to not be the only, you know, seed of pepper out in the salt of trying to fight for LGBT mm-hmm. rights. And it doesn't matter if I was in that environment of the Hispanic or Asian or black environment. If I was in California, I've gone all over the country and I've talked to these issues. It's not that. We didn't want to get into this discussion, but you know, if you date somebody who is white and you go to these things, they're not going to say the same thing to you when it's two Hispanic people or two black people or two women. They're not going to do that. And I've dated my share of Hispanic women or black women myself, and I've gone to these things, and you're not treated the same as if I went there on a date with a white woman or I went with my white male friends. They didn't dare call me the N-word in front of them, whereas they had no problem when it was a group of us together. So you cannot feel comfortable when you're being called names and because you're a group of, you know, black people together, and you want to be a part of something, but they're still segregating you. They're still treating you. And we cannot get past that. If we cannot have an honest conversation about
that
it,
it's happening.
We're never going to get past it. And my thing is, there's this misconception about how black people are welfare queens and weed smokers. Now, some are like chicken. Some stereotypes are true. I'm not going to go. You know, race rooted. We like chicken. I'm not going to lie. But some are not, and we're not welfare. We're 14% of the population. Less than 3% of that are in some kind of social program, which includes Social Security. So how can less than 3% of the 14% of the population be weighing down the country? There's some misconceptions and some stereotypes that have been allowed to be carried on into society and be acceptable truths that are not true. You were talking to that when we were out in the green room.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me throw it over to Patty, if you will, because, you know, activist queen, you know, what, you know, I know sometimes there's been, you know, real movements, or not movements, but, you know, we're trying to get more people in color involved. You know, what have you heard anything from other people of color activists as to why they're not more involved?
Well, I think it has to do with just complacency at large. I think an enormous segment of the LGBT community, regardless of any of their personal characteristics or demographics, are just living their lives.
Yeah.
And they don't see room and they don't make room in their daily lives for activism.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people don't make room in their lives to stay informed. A lot of people don't make room in their lives to participate in any way. They go to work, they drive their kids to soccer, they come home and, you know, or whatever their daily activities are, and that's it. That's what they're doing. They're living their lives, and they see their struggles as their own issues and not something that we can do together to move forward. And I think that's a problem. I think that's a big problem.
And Michael, the way you became involved in activism is kind of an odd route. Explain. You were our guest right after that happened, but explain the whole story just real briefly and how that motivated you.
I don't even, you know, to be honest, I don't even consider myself really an activist. I just consider myself somebody who has a lot of opinions.
Yeah, he was in, he was in two films that were released last week.
You're advocating for me.
I picture an activist as somebody who I don't know what I picture. I'm a guy who sees things
CD.
Going on. Well, I mean, I just see CD again. We're somebody who sees things that need to be addressed and need to be changed. And the honest truth is, doing it by yourself or doing it with such a small community of other people who feel that way, it gets exhausting. But if we get more people involved, it becomes less exhausting, and people get less loud and less angry because we have more people to help us with that. But for me, the way that I became involved was kind of a byproduct of an assault. And it was more along the lines of me trying to get information on what happened to me, and then it just kind of snowballed to meeting a lot of people in the community, and then seeing the discord that was in the Dallas community, to be honest with you. I was from Austin, and I will be 100% honest, Austin's really not that great for diversity. There's a lot of different factors that go into why Austin's not great for diversity, but I loved Austin, and I never realized how lacking in diversity it was until I moved to Dallas. And that's kind of when I started to say, you know what, I have a lot more black friends here than I did in Austin, and then having some of my Austin friends saying, you're hanging out with a lot of black people. And in my mind, I was like, well, no, I'm just hanging out with people. There just happens to be more here because Austin is the way that Austin is. And so that's what kind of prompted me to say, okay, there's something going on. People are viewing things a certain way that I'm not viewing them. These thoughts are crossing other people's minds that aren't crossing my minds. Let's talk about it. What am I missing? Because obviously I'm not catching something, but you are 300 miles away.
Well, I think
away.
It's just the elephant in the room that nobody. And there's a reason for that. When you want to refuse to address that there's a race problem in the LGBT community, there's a part of you that wants it to stay the same. Mm. It's the same reason why people don't want to address racism in the straight community. There's a supremacy aspect to it. Mm-hmm. I don't care what people say. Yeah. It's like they say that dreads are not appropriate for professional office wear. Who said that?
Yeah.
And like when somebody wears dreads like Justin Bieber, oh, you're culturally appropriating. Why is that? Nobody ever accused me of culturally appropriating when my hair was straight. Yeah. Nobody said, oh, you're trying to be white, your hair is straight. No, you're dressing appropriately for the office. Cut your hair short and wear it straight. So there's a supremacy aspect to this that people don't want to address. They want it to stay the same. There's just like the white, like we talked earlier about the whitewashing of Stonewall.
Right.
When you know darn well Stonewall was not started or acted up or done anything by white males. It was Puerto Rican transgenders. It was black lesbians. It was black transgenders who had enough of being stomped on by the police and everybody else.
Yeah, we could do a whole show on.
I
wanted to point this out there. This is something that we're going to try and do a series of, maybe every 2 or 3 months or something, to talk about some racism issues. But we could do a whole show on just racism within the from the media aspect, mm-hmm. aspect in the LGBT community. You know, from all the magazines, like you mentioned earlier, having just a hot straight white boy or hot white boy on the cover. You know, what, really?
Well, it doesn't matter if you have a hot straight black boy. I told you my opinion about that. Just because you sleep with a black person doesn't make you not racist.
Exactly.
They slept with slaves. Yeah. I'm a product of that.
Yeah. So the media thing, but again, talking about the media and you're talking about the whitewashing.
Right,
Stonewall,
I mean, and I want this misconception that it was so long ago, it was hundreds of years ago, shut up complaining. No, it wasn't. My mom was bussed.
Right.
In the summers when I was 12 years old, I used to go, my grandmother sent me to Lubbock to spend time with my great-grandmother. She was, you know, pretty much half Indian, half white. Her mother was half black, half white. Her mother was a product of slave rape. So those stories when you gather with your family and you listen to stories of the past and what happened in your family, we heard those stories. Those sharecropping, rapist stories that makes him my grandmother and that slave my grandmother. That is my history. That is our history. And the misconception of you saying I'm African American, I'm sick of that too. I am not. I'm black American because I don't hear anybody saying you're Irish American. Or you're European American, or you're German American. They say white Americans. We're black Americans because we can't go back to Africa. We're too whitewashed for them. Our history is bound together. We are Americans together. And it's slavery that made America great.
We need to take a break, but before we do, go ahead, Patty.
I was just going to say the nowness of all of that history expresses itself too when you see someone just as recently as, say, Rick Perry. Mm-hmm. Rick Perry was a grown man and in college and out of college by the time women in this state were allowed to have a credit card in their own name, by the time women in this state were allowed to have a bank account to own property without their husband's name. I mean, he was a grown man. So you don't think a whole lifetime up until you're in your 20s doesn't set things in your mind? We still have a whole generation of old white guys who have a lot of power in this state and in this country who lived those... That history is alive today in their minds, and that's the way things should be for them. And that's a problem, you know. And we can say, well, we have to wait for them to die off. But they're passing that on as we speak to their kids and their sons. You know, it's a problem. Right. History is alive today.
Absolutely.
And you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Laurent Landis and the late Patty Fink. And we'll be back with more of C.D. Kervin and Michael Dominguez right after this.
Hey, guys. I'm C.D. Kervin. And you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. Michael Dominguez is one of our guests. C.D. Kervin is a guest of ours, and we're talking about racism. Michael, before the show, I was doing the previous show, but I ran in, and the line that I picked up on is, "And I'm not good in bed." Or what if I'm not good?
Why would you bring that up?
That did not happen.
So, however,
let me
okay,
backtrack.
So let him explain. And,
but I would like to set the record straight that.
Yeah, no, what you were talking about was interesting.
Yeah.
What was the question?
Well, we were talking about dating and the interracial aspect and the racism that comes with all that. And that spiraled into stereotypes.
Me not being good in bed.
Him not being good in bed, and what stereotypes are for what black men do in bed, and the hot Latinos, and so forth.
And so, I mean, he was kind of asking for specific cases of racism, and I very, you know, honestly said my experience with racism is going to be dramatically different than some of the experiences that CD has been talking about, just because the racism that I experience, and I think a lot of other Latinos experience, is almost like a casual joking racism. It's the jokes about lawn work or the jokes about selling pinatas on the side of the road that everybody kind of laughs at. It's like, oh, I'm just joking. I know you're not illegal, or let me see your papers. It's almost this just kind of throwback. I would say this anytime, you know, one of my friends would date a white guy or whatever, we would always joke like, oh, you want to get new papers or whatever. That's just – it's one of the things – we're all Latino. It's what we joke about, but it's – you at the core, you're like, okay, so this is also being joked about elsewhere. That's a problem. It's a very casual, almost comedic racism that people think is okay. And so we kind of got off to, you know, in the age of chat apps and when people are trying to hit on you, they almost think that it's like a compliment to hit you up with, oh, I really love Latinos. You guys are so hot. You're so spicy and blah. I love when a guy talks Spanish to me in bed. And I'm like, one, I don't speak Spanish, so you're going to be very disappointed. I'm not that good in bed if that's what you're measuring what that is. And it's
so
almost.
That's what you heard.
So yeah, thank you, David.
I don't think he actually said that exactly. Michael, don't go down that road. You did not say that.
I feel a setup.
I have the introduction for Michael whenever I get to introduce him from now on.
That's not true. Don't
but it's almost the. And we talked about this at a greater length, and my friends and I have talked about it. It's the fetishization of minorities where when you say something like, I love Latinos, you guys are so hot, what you're saying is, I really don't care what's going on in your head. I don't care about your journey. I don't care about your experience, your IQ, your job, nothing. I see skin color and I think that's hot. And,
do you know, when I was dating before I met Brian, I can't tell you how many times I was approached and it was, well, do you like black guys? And my answer was, well, it depends on who.
Yeah.
Do you like Latino guys? Well, it depends on who. And that was almost like, well, do you or don't you? You know.
Yeah. But the thing
I always found that to be an odd question.
Yeah. The thing
but
you
there
have
are
to
guys
understand.
That do fetishize this, like,
oh, absolutely.
Young Asian men.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, I mean, there's a lot of that out there.
Well, to expound on David's point is. A lot of minorities have to ask that because if we hit on somebody, you don't know how many times that I've been said, sorry, I only date white guys. And I'm like, well, I'm just saying high.
Right.
So I've even dated black guys that are like, so do you like black guys? I'm like, well, I'm talking with you. Like, that's a weird question. I almost get offended, but then at the same time, I'm sad. Because what have they heard from people that are making them check?
It's at the core of what we were talking about before. I mean, we can minimize it and direct it towards dating, or we could talk about the social economic impacts, or we can talk about where it integrates with other things. But it still goes back to the fact that we need to have, not just on this radio show, like as a community, it would be nice to have a forum where we all can sit down and say, where, you know, talk to these issues.
Go on Patty's point, which you were talking about earlier about, you know, you made the point about, you know, Rick Perry grew up, you know, people grew up like this, so it doesn't leave their minds when they're 20s or 30s.
Unless they're forced to.
You know, and that includes individuals in the LGBT community. I remember one of the first proms that we covered. There was a young lesbian girl there, and she was telling me about her mom, how when she came out to her mom, now this girl was already like 19 or 20, but she still went to the prom. And she was telling me that her mom's response when she told her that she was a lesbian, her mom said, well, do you have a girlfriend? She says, yeah. She goes, is she black? Mm-hmm. And she said, no. She goes, well, that's fine, as long as you don't bring any black girls home.
Yeah, that happens a lot.
And so I was just like, oh my God, are you serious? So that girl already has to fight that. She knows that it's wrong, but that's what's been ingrained in her head. So, you know, just when she gets immersed in the gay LGBT community in her 20s and 30s, unless she's forced to, that's already set in her head.
But look at what we see, like, right now in circulation, and it's been on for a while. If you get it any sort of the cable premium channels, I can't remember if it's HBO or Showtime or whatever, is The L Word Mississippi. Mm-hmm. Have you seen this documentary?
No.
Oh, yeah. No.
In Mississippi, of course, just passed this, you know, crazy bigoted bill.
Mm-hmm.
But what it portrays is white women, Latino women, Latinas, black women, Asian women who live in Mississippi that have so bought into the way they were raised. And the way people are raised is really a huge influencer in people's lives.
Absolutely.
And almost to a person, a couple of exceptions, but almost to a person, they are being gay in Mississippi against all odds, but they know, quote, I know I'm going to hell. They are defying their religion, but they still buy into that.
Absolutely.
That they are condemned to hell for being who they are. And so, I mean, that's an enormous influence on one's life. And I know most people in the LGBT community who are out come to terms with that and from a religious perspective, but they don't take that baggage with it, that I'm somehow less than, I'm not what God wants, you know, that I'm going to hell. But almost to a person in this documentary, they have. Well, and it makes me sad because that kind of being raised in that environment has an enormous oppressive influence on one's life. And it shows itself not just in that perspective, but also in racism, in sexism.
Well, you have to make a choice. If I'm already gay and my parents are accepting me as gay, as long as I don't date these people, well, then I want to at least stay
bad in one area.
Good with that.
Exactly.
You have to pick and choose, and that's a horrible position to be in. And at some point, like you said, you accept that.
Right.
But then, I mean, on the flip side, not everybody is like that. You get people in the Dallas gay community that are very plainly in your face. I only date white guys, no blacks, no Mexicans, no Asians.
That's another, obviously, now we could spend a whole other show on it, but we can talk a little bit about it now. That's a huge discussion on social media right now, and has been for the past year. There's been articles written on it. What is the difference, or what is actual preference, and what's actual racism? When you say, I don't date black men, or I don't date Latino women, or whatever, but then you back it up by saying, I'm entitled to that because that's just what I prefer. Where some people, others say, well, no, that's actually being racist.
Preference is, I don't date anybody only over 6'3", because I find it very difficult to hold a conversation with my head looking up the entire time. That's a preference. I don't care if you're black, white, Asian, whatever. I just won't date anybody over 6'3", because that's a preference. It's stupid. But I'm not discriminating against anybody unless you're tall. But at the core,
Is it more about approach?
No, it's not approach. It's just, for me, and I probably need to talk to my therapist about this, I equate height with almost – like assertiveness. I like a relationship. I like somebody that's around my height or a little bit taller because I want to feel like we're on a level playing field. If I feel like I'm looking up to somebody, I feel like
all
now.
All the time?
Yeah. Then I feel like the
we're laughing.
I see the irony of that,
because Patty is 6'7".
Yeah. Patty's inches. What? I was about to say Patty's wife. What do you refer to now?
No, we don't do wife.
I know you don't.
And I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why. Because when I was growing up, my dad and his brothers and family and the whole community in Texas he would refer to my mother, and speaking to his buddies and his peers, he would refer to my mother as the wife. Capital T, capital W. And you know, I'm like, you know what? My mother has a name.
Right.
My mother has an identity that is not about you. It's not about your relationship together. She is not the wife.
Right.
And it was so derogatory, and it was meant to be that way. There's no question in my mind, even as a 4-year-old, that it was meant to be derogatory. That I just can't.
But, I mean,
I can't embrace the word. I can't.
I understand. So, just like some lesbians can. Like, I would call my partner my wife, and I would call her my partner too.
Right.
It's all about how you grew up.
It's all about how I grew up. Exactly.
So what do you call Aaron? For those who aren't listening, Patty did get married recently. Congratulations.
Congrats.
Thank you.
So what do you refer to Aaron as? Your spouse?
My spouse.
Okay. So Patty's spouse is considerably taller than Patty. She's always looking up.
But you know, I joke about that. I bring that up. That's a preference. But if somebody fine gonna come up to me and he's like 6'6" and is like, hey, can I take you on at a date? I'm not telling him no. Like, I'm gonna go.
You know,
this is
the problem though. We always regulate back to this issue when it's a broader issue. And my thing is that when you're me, it bleeds into everything. That's why I became an activist, because it just every time I look around, I'm getting discriminated for some reason. And to be honest, if we're going into the dating aspect, it doesn't matter. I have dated Hispanic women, and they didn't want to take me home because I was black.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, my family would not like you because you're black. It's not just because we're lesbians, but because you're black, you know, or because I would take my Hispanic people back to my friends or their family, and they'd be like, what? Why are you dating a Hispanic girl? Yeah. Why aren't you dating a black girl? Black girl's not good enough for you? I mean, let's not pretend in the dating aspect that can't go back and forth.
Oh, yeah.
To me, if you're bold enough to stand in your own truth and say that I'm gay, there's a moral connotation to that. I get it. But there's also a moral connotation to racism.
Absolutely.
And to sexism, like you were explaining about your dad, or like I've explained about the racial instinct. You can stand up against that. Mm-hmm. If you can say that I'm gay, you can say, you're a racist. Stop saying that. You're being sexist. Stop saying that. And that's what I'm saying. It's like, it's so, so hard in this community that, you know, I don't really want to run for politics anymore. I just want to make films. I want to do animation. I want to do art. I don't even want to do it anymore. It's exhausting because
I want you to run for office.
No.
I would love that race.
Because it's a black person and as a woman.
Would you love that? I want her to run for office.
No.
Could you see that? The debates would be interesting.
I'd watch the debate.
What debate? No.
There wouldn't be any debate. I'd just have a gay man and gay women all around me, and we would rule the world together. No, I'm kidding.
And
transgender security system. I mean, Secretary of State, and I would just do it that way. I would do queer everywhere. That's what
I understand what you're saying. It's at the core of it. It's you should be able to walk in your truth regardless of what it is. And if we are not afraid to call somebody a homophobe, we should not be afraid to tell somebody that what you're saying is wrong, that's racist, it's inflammatory, it's discriminatory, and it's prejudice. And that has no place for a fringe group minority like we have been historically. And it's not okay. You're not doing me a favor by saying you like Latinos or you think black guys are so hot or anything. You're not doing anybody any favors. What you're continuing to do is perpetrate a cycle of oppression. And if you cut me off when I'm trying to explain that to you, you're continuing to silence me. And people, I mean, you said at the beginning of the show, why do people say you're the angry black lesbian? And it's like, because we have decades of people telling me to keep my mouth shut and not have an opinion that has brought people to being angry. And I feel like when you bring this topic up, people don't want to hear about it because it's uncomfortable. And it's like, well, you made it uncomfortable. If we had this conversation 50, 60 years ago, like, Jesus, look how much progress we would have made. At some point, the conversation has to start.
But how? What do you think the backdrop of today's politics has has made on this conversation? Because if you look at the Trump side, he's really made it okay to be an out, open, proud bigot.
Yeah.
And a racist and a sexist. And, I mean, pick something.
No, but next week he's going to get, presidential.
2.0.
Right.
2.0,
right. But, I mean, but all the world around us, as we navigate life on a daily basis, there is that element out there, and it is everywhere. I mean, if we think there aren't any Trump supporters in our daily lives that we cross paths with, we are wrong, because they're there.
Somebody's voting for him. He's not the front runner by himself.
Exactly, And it's everywhere. It's all around us, even more so.
It's been a running joke with my friends and I. It's like... It's like Trump supporters. It's like, do you know any? No, do you know any? It's like, we finally found one on my Facebook and finally found one on his Facebook, and there's somebody at his job. So they're slowly coming out of the shadows.
They've been there. Let's not pretend like they haven't been there.
Exactly.
This thing with the whole Tea Party, it's been bubbling under the surface for years. There are places in Texas that I can't go.
Yeah.
James Byrd didn't hook himself up to the back of a truck and drag himself into pieces, people.
Yeah.
That was with the Matthew Shepard. That happened at the same time. He was dragged to the back of a car because he was black.
Yep.
2 years ago, some black man who is married to a white woman who had a mixed kid went to a grocery store, and he was hung. And they said he did it to himself, and how he was hung with his hands tied behind his back. There are places...
Sandra Bland.
There are places in Texas black people can't go. So let's not pretend that just, you know... This is coming out of the blue. I tell you what's happening, and you know, I would rather you be racist in my face. I liked dealing with Westboro Church when they were right there in my face. I could see who you were. I'd know how you felt. I hate people that stand beside me and say they're not a racist and are really a racist.
I agree with you. Racist, anti-gay, whatever. I always want to know.
The bigot show themselves.
Right. Exactly.
I'll know to either avoid you or get in a debate and try to embarrass you publicly.
Before we go, we have 2 minutes. Michael, he kind of explained why he was on last time. Michael was a survivor of an attack in Oak Lawn. He was one of the first people attacked in Oak Lawn. Somebody came up behind him. In this spate of attacks.
The current climate.
He somebody came up from behind him somewhere, like right in front of S4 or within that block, hit him in the back of the head with probably a baseball bat, cracked his head, cracked his eye socket. Michael, when I saw you last week, I said to you, you look so much better compared to a picture that was on the screen.
Yeah.
How are you actually doing?
Good. I mean, people always come up and say, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry that happened, blah, blah, blah. And I'm at the point where I'm not. Like, there's a lot of good things that are coming from this. Like, I'm here talking about a topic that, honestly, I wouldn't have been given a platform had that not happened. Mm-hmm. And it's a good topic, and I may be, you know, not have experienced everything that the two of you have experienced, but equality is understanding that somebody's walk is different than yours and accepting it and realizing that I can learn a hell of a lot by listening to you. And figuring out where our differences are and having commonality. And I'm happy for the platform that particularly heinous instant has brought for me. So I have no ill will towards that now.
With your eye, I know you had an operation about two months ago.
Yeah.
How is your vision doing? You're still having some problems.
The vision is good. The eye's taking a little bit more time to heal up, but it's all muscles and trying to repair themselves and fix up, but
so it looks like they will repair themselves
over time. Yeah,
good. Because you know, we can talk about race and everything else, but a couple of these I've been in tears over, you know, writing about them and whatever, and that was one of them.
Well, we can be honest.
I was a victim of a hate crime years ago, but it wasn't
violence covered. Manifests itself.
So
whenever.
You know, but I mean, I don't really care if it happened to Michael or you or Patty or me. You know, I would be in the streets protesting no matter what their race, and some people wouldn't.
Violence happens whenever you stay quiet.
Right.
And the whole movement that has started now is because you don't have to stay silent, because silence only further allows the people and the cowards who do this, you give them a platform to continue to do it. And we need to have these conversations. We need to say that the casual racism, the blatant racism, it's dangerous, and it breeds an atmosphere of discord within our community at a time when we really need to be looking out for each other.
And also, when you tell the black community, you should stand with us, you know what it feels like, well, you're discriminating against our black children in your community, but you want us to stand with you.
Yeah.
That's kind of hypocritical that the LGBT community tells the black community that, but doesn't want to address the racism in its community. And what I'm saying to everybody that's listening tonight, you want to change that? You want to begin to change that? Somebody nominate a black person for Black Gay Pride thing this year.
I nominate you.
Decades of prejudice and make it happen, Dallas. Let's make that happen this year. Yeah, that's the beginning.
Let me just take a 1 second break for station ID, and then we're going to talk for another couple of minutes. The other show is just setting up behind us, but they asked us if we could stretch for just a minute, and we'll wrap up.
You are listening to KNON 89.3 FM in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
This up in an hour.
Just dating.
No, we won't. Yeah. So, real quick, I know we're wrapping up, but thank you both for coming on and talking about
you.
This.
No,
please come back. You know, I know you both will be back several more times.
Let's do this topic again.
And there's several other smaller topics just within this issue that we can elaborate on for quite a while. But I just wanted to say something, you know, what you said about, you know, equality. You know, equality is not competition.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we might have different issues that we're kind of trying to reach, but let's not play this game of, oh, I had it worse than you had it.
That's the case. I think people do that because as soon as you start bringing your issue out, they start saying, well, what about them? What about them?
Right.
And that avoids talking about that issue.
Gary.
Let's talk about that one, and then let's move on to the next one. I think that's what it is.
People
want to do that and say, you're shutting it down, but you're shutting them down. You're not hearing them out, and we're not trying to find a solution.
Exactly.
You're dumping other problems on it so that we don't address that problem. That's not a competition. That's silencing.
We've all had it crappy in different aspects.
Right.
So, that's it. Thanks.
Great. And we'll be back next week with more Lambda Weekly. Candy Markham's our guest, and we'll see you then.
Thank you.